Jason Houston, welcome to Worldviews.
Thank you, Suzette. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you for joining us all the way from Italy. Some exciting times going on over there. We have recently witnessed the resignation and retirement of Pope Benedict. This was obviously very significant given its historical, well, this hasn't happened in a long time. 600 years ago, we had a pope resign, Celestine V. But it hasn't happened since then. Can you tell us what's going on here with Pope Benedict's resignation and why is this so historically significant? Why does this not normally happen?
Well, it's a difficult story to tell because the circumstances around the resignation of the previous pope, as you mentioned, Celestine V, in 1294, he resigned and died in 1296, were also very murky. And so too is the case now. Although Benedict XVI, who retired or resigned now about a month ago, explained that it was because of his health that he resigned, no one quite in Italy believes that's the full answer and that there are other forces at play behind that. I don't know, obviously, why he resigned, but the fact that he did resign is revolutionary. There's a reason that it's been 600 years since a pope's resigned, because it really does affect the position of the office of papacy. Popes don't resign, and when they do, it doesn't end well. And in fact, the pope who resigned in 1294 and died in 1296, Celestine V, was imprisoned by the pope who took over after him. And that pope, Boniface VIII, led to the downfall of the papacy and moving it to France, to Avignon, for 100 years, which is the so-called Babylonian captivity. So the last time the papacy was resigned, it ended up in a disaster for the papacy, for the institution of the papacy.
Yeah, because there was a lot of conflict at the time within the church. I mean, does it really sound like it's all that different from what we see today? I mean, there are a lot of people who are very critical of the Catholic Church and in particular the Vatican. So, you know, are we likely to see something similar to that? Or is this really just an issue of Pope Benedict was ill? I mean, he looks very frail. There are all of these reports about scandal and whatnot. But like you said, you know, there's been little to prove that anything is amiss. So can we really compare the two situations?
Well, that's one thing I think I get from living in Italy and living in Europe in general. The fact that history is continually repeating itself and events that happened 600 years ago, which seems so far away in Italy, maybe particularly in Italy, don't seem that far away. And people around here know that, and they know the circumstances, and they know the fact that politics, papal, and secular in Italy are always intermixed. And it isn't by chance that the Pope chose to resign a month before the Italian national elections. Actually, no, a week before the Italian national elections. No one here thought that that was by chance. Equally, back in 1294, when Celestine V resigned, everyone understood that it wasn't because he wanted to go back and be a hermit. They pulled him out of the cave to make him pope. He didn't want to be pope. They literally drug him out of the cave in Umbria and forced him onto the papal throne. But they were done with him, and someone pushed him out. I'm not suggesting that Benedict XVI was pushed out. I don't know, and no one knows, other than Benedict and maybe a few around him. But what I am fairly certain of is that Italians understand or believe that there's more to it than what we know.
So there's something else going on behind the scenes here. I mean, you mentioned that politics in Italy and the church in Italy, that they kind of go hand in hand, that there's this connection. And so the fact that there was some timing going on here would lead everyone to be suspicious, or is it just that, you know, Italians are just suspicious?
Both. You know, it's hard to answer, but here they really think they're onto something, especially the Italians who are more left, center left, who always see the church as mingling unwelcomely in the affairs of state. And I think that they feel, the people of the Movimento Cinque Stelle, which is the third party, let's say, in Italian politics, that had 30% of the vote this time, an incredible turnout, they feel really vindicated by the fact that even though, as they see it, Benedict played this ultimate card to try to get the citizens to vote center-right, Monti's party, they didn't, and that the Italian citizens continued to move away from that kind of politics towards the new politics of the five-star movement and Beppe Grillo. So there's no separation of church and state here institutionally or intellectually. It's just assumed that these things go hand in hand. And very few people know, I think, outside of Italy, that Italian taxpayers pays for the maintenance of all the cardinals in Rome. They pay the Vatican to be there, and they're very upset about that, especially in this time of economic crisis. So, yes, they suspect too much, I believe, but they're sure something's going on. And that's just the way Italians are.
So speaking of the response then, the reaction of the public 600 years ago compared to the reaction of the public today, I mean, what has been the general response there in Italy?
The reaction 600 years ago of the people, the everyday person in Italy, is of course much harder to know because of sources. We just don't know what people were saying. But one important reaction, and one that carries a lot of weight, not only in Italy but around the world, is the fact that Dante Alighieri, the very famous Italian poet who wrote the Divine Comedy, put Celestine V in hell for giving up the papacy, specifically for that fact. Even though Celestine V in 1313 was made a saint by the church, Dante, when he wrote the Inferno in about 1305 to 1310, chose to put Celestine V in hell for the reason, for that exact reason. Because not so much of the fact that he resigned, but because what came after. Because the fact that Boniface was able to take over afterwards and lead the church down this path that, of ruin in his mind. So that response has carried a lot of weight across the generations. And I can't believe that Benedict didn't know that when he resigned. It was interesting. In 2009, Benedict went to the grave of Celestine V. He visited the church where Celestine V was buried. He, at that time, took off the pallium, which is the cord, the wool cord that's invested on the Pope, the day he got invested in 2005, and laid it on Celestine V's tomb. Did he know already in 2009 that he was going to resign? What was that act? It's an interesting moment. But he had to know what Dante's judgment was of that act and the danger that it posed for the church at that time.
Wow, an interesting historical connection there. What can you tell us about Pope Francis? And related to what can you tell us about him, I mean, we're already seeing images of Pope Francis meeting with Pope Emeritus Benedict. And so the question, I mean, what an unusual sight to see, right? These two popes together. It's unheard of. I mean, what are the implications of this? And is Pope Emeritus Benedict going to be involved at all in Pope Francis's tenure as pope?
Yeah, that scene and the video that it was provided, obviously, by the Vatican, and there's a little video montage of the interaction between Francis and Benedict in Castel Gandolfo, which happened on this last Saturday, is striking, and I would have to say even a little disconcerting, because as you look at the video, when Benedict approaches the Pope, Francis, what do? When you meet the Pope, you kiss his ring. Benedict does not kiss Francis's ring. At least it's not in the video montage we see. They meet as equals. And if anything, Benedict is in charge of the meeting. You see later that they're sitting there reading. Francis is in the visitor's chair. Benedict is in the chair of the desk. I mean, just the optics, as we might say, of that meeting don't work well to show that the new pope's in charge. You spoke also about Francis's Italian heritage. That has made him a favorite in Italy. They don't see him as an Argentinian. They see him as an Italian who moved to Argentina, if you understand the difference there. They very much identify him as Italian, more so, more European even, in their perspective, than Ratzinger, than Benedict XVI, in the sense that he's one of theirs. He is not an Italian pope, but he's as close as you can get to an Italian pope. And I think that makes a lot of Italians happy, because this immigrant experience of Italian is part of their history, and they identify with it.
So does this bode well then for Pope Francis in terms of his reign? You know, the significant issues he's facing. I mean, there are so many things that he's, you know, faced with today. The challenges that the church is dealing with. Is this you know, he's being well received? Does this mean that there's a lot of hope for what he will do for the church?
I think there's hope, but I think that there's the hope that I sense is not institutional hope. What I mean by that is people aren't talking about how he's going to fix the problems of the Curia, and that was Benedict's problem, the administration of the church in Rome. He doesn't seem like a strong character in that sense. He's charismatic. He's going to fix, Italians believe he's going to fix, that I've spoken to, the image of the church, or even better, or even more specific, the image of the papacy. He's 76, he has one lung. I don't think people imagine him having a long papacy. But
That was the question. I mean, he also is advanced in age and not necessarily, 100% healthy, as has one lung. So the question is, do you think Pope Benedict has set a precedent here that perhaps we'll see future popes resign due to their health or other issues?
I wonder if Benedict meant that. If he's done that, he has changed the papacy in a way no one has since probably the 11th century. That would be an incredible change to the institution of the papacy if there's a precedence to resignation. I don't think it's going to happen. I think Francis will serve out his time until his death, and I think that will continue to be the way the papacy changes hands. And this will stand out as a moment that we'll talk about, or that church historians will talk about for the next 600 years. But if it does change the way that the papacy is elected or the office is held, that'll be a radical change that will completely change the office, in my estimation. That's to be seen.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Jason Houston, for joining us on Worldviews and bringing this perspective from Italy and adding an historical flair. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Suzette, for having me. It was a pleasure.